in a few weeks, really. So thanks for toughing it out with us in the meantime. And it's my great privilege to introduce someone I've known for the entire, in fact, longer than I've been sober. She's a great example, I think, of AA in action. And it's my privilege to introduce you to Miss Mandy.
Hi. My name is Mandy. I am an alcoholic.
Hi, Mandy.
I'm so excited to be here and share my experience, strength, and hope. Most of you have heard my story, if not all of you. But the good thing about that is you think that it's born after all, but then we get to talk about living sober. The longer we're here, the more we get to share. And, you know, the story that where I come from, we all have a lot of similarities, some differences, but the miracle that happens and keeps us here on living, the longer I'm here, the more I realize this is right where I'm supposed to be. This is where my life is supposed to be. This is what's giving me life and helping me through the insane times, because I got a lot of sanity today. I'm still a work in progress. So I want to just let you start off by telling you I got sober, got introduced to this program when I was 20, but it took me a few years to get it. I'll start with my childhood. I grew up in a really nice home with my parents and my brother. I was the baby. Both parents could drink or not drink. They weren't alcoholics. In fact, I've never really seen my parents. I've seen them tipsy, but they were always the type that would have coffee by the end of the night. So that's way different than what I did. But mind you, my dad was a Coors Light salesman, so he worked for Coors. So, and my dad had the two refrigerators out in the garage. So, you know, I never thought drinking was a big deal because my dad could drink every day or not drink at all. I've never seen him, like, have a problem with it. I had a decent home, a good home. But I remember being curious because I love my dad, and I remember the first time I stole a beer. I've shared this before, but I stole a beer out of my dad's fridge because he'd always say, Bubba, go get me a beer. Go get Jean a beer, one of the friends, or go get so-and-so. So I snuck one and I drank half it, and it was disgusting. It was a good old Coors Light. And I just remember, now it's weird that God had me remember that moment, because as I reflect back now that I'm recovering, I remember when I drank half that beer, not even half, maybe a quarter, I was like, I got to get rid of this, but why didn't I pour it out and throw it somewhere else? Said I finished the rest of it, and then I squashed it, and then I put it in the neighbor's thing. That's odd. That's not, like, what most kids are kind of dumb to that, and they'll just throw it in their own trash and get caught. That's me, anyways. I grew up, and I did the typical go to school, grew up with all the same kids, played every sport you could play, scuffled pike, did city leagues, got to start dancing, couldn't do what all my friends did. Dancing was expensive, but I got to do like ballet and jazz and gymnastics, and I was an active kid. And I was in junior high, and I remember having a beer here and there, but my first drunk, that was my freshman year, and you know, that ego is still real fresh. You don't know it's an ego, you just like to be cool and have lots of friends. And my first party, I was a freshman, I went out with a senior, girls, and took me out to Hanford, and all the Hanford High girls, and I remember thinking, this is cool. We're invited to a party at this guy, Houston's, there, but everyone knew who Houston was. There was a restaurant in Hanford called Houston's. That was a death, and so, small town, but we were the only girls invited, and I just thought that was so neat. Now I look back, and I think, I could have really been hurt. I mean, I didn't know anything, and I remember I probably had like 3 beers and I think a wine cooler, and I was ripped. That I felt good, so I liked it. I didn't get in trouble that night. Everything was good, but that was the beginning of the high school drinking and partying. And my first time I got in trouble legally, I did get in trouble one time legally before high school, but I really wasn't even drinking that night. That was when I was at Lemur High, and I was like a sophomore, junior, and it was like 3 girls and 3 guys in a 4-seater Jeep Wrangler. And long story short, the boys had to go. I don't know if they were going to get in a fight. I can't remember, it's been so long. that there was a cop on night patrol through the neighborhood, and they saw us. Well, I had moved over to the driver's seat, and the engine was still on, even though we were in neutral, and there was an open container in the car. It wasn't mine. I really wasn't drinking that night. But because I was behind the wheel, and there was an open container, and the ignition was on, I got a minor. Nobody else, just me. But I just thought it was bad luck. And so I had to go to a misdemeanor court for that. And was it for underage? I don't know if they call that anymore. I can't remember. When I started to fall into my wanting to get intoxicated, well, I mean, I like doing it all through high school, but when I started getting to a point where I did it every day, I was a freshman in college. And my, you know, it's funny because I'll look at, like, us getting tired by, like, 9 or 10 o'clock, and that's when we were just getting started. And I could drink with the best of them. I was never a huge, heavy drinker, but I was always intoxicated, whether it was alcohol or other substance. I even came to a point, even though this is an Alcoholics Anonymous, I came to the point where every morning I was smoking, I was starting my morning with a bowl of marijuana. I'd always smoke a bowl. And it's so weird now that I say it, because I did not come from that. But it happened so fast that it was my norm. And it's still, I trip out on it. Yet, my addict in me loved it. So I started dabbling, and to go back really quick, when I started to hit puberty through, like, junior high, I was, like, a delayed person because I played sports and I'm really tall. Most girls are pretty tall. We're kind of off. I had it maybe once a year for about 3 or 4 years. And but something happened to me when I started my period. I started feeling weird. And at first I was like, what is wrong with me? Because I've always been kind of the happy, woo, everyone, let's be friends. And I just started to get, like, down. And I was like, what's wrong with me? And I would go from, like, Jekyll to Hyde. And I was like, I didn't want to tell anyone because it was just, like, it was embarrassing. It was such a big deal to me at that age. But I was like, something's really wrong with me, but if I don't say anything, maybe it'll just go away. And it didn't go away, and I ended up trying to end it. And I spent some pills. It was my brother's old Ritalin. I didn't know what it was. I just saw a bottle of pills. I didn't know. I took, like, a handful. Well, it was a call for help, because once I realized what I did, I thought, oh, my God, I'm going to kill my parents. Like, this is going to break their heart. And I told on myself. But I remember that moment of really wanting it to be done. And not like, I don't want to hurt people. I just, like, I just don't want to do this. And I was sober. So, you know, as I get older and I start to drink and consume mind-altering chemicals, I can look back now and, yeah, I didn't want to feel. I wanted to feel, but not that. So I could feel other things. I'm drunk. Hyper. on speed, or laid back and just stuck. And I rotated, and I got some schooling done little by little, but I kind of started lagging. And I remember my first DUI, I went to my brother's house, and I had a bottle of strawberry. It was popular in the 90s, strawberry old boom. So we're up to talk about it. We talk about booms. And I remember I was driving back to Hanford. I wasn't drunk. Well, I probably was, but I always smoked out with everything. It was just so normal for me. It was like having a cigarette, yet it wasn't a cigarette. And I got pulled over in Hanford on 10th Avenue, where it's a busy street, and the cop was so sweet. And I was like, that's me. I don't want. Sure, I should have to go to jail that night. I had to. He arrested me, and he's like, I'm sorry to you. Luckily, they didn't impound my car. My friend got to drive it home. And I remember hearing about Kings County drunk tank in Hanford, but I was like, whoa. Because it was like a room like out of Disneyland, Alice in Wonderland. The walls were painted like with cartoon characters like Dumbo and his mom and It was just weird, and I wasn't on any trippy stuff that night, so I don't know what happened. And then there wasn't a toilet, there was a pee hole. Luckily, it wasn't a Friday or Saturday, it was busy. It was a good old Wednesday, me by myself and the drunk pig. And they were so sweet. I have a picture, the jail bird picture. I was a mess. I was so effed up because I was crying, trying to get my way out of it. And it's, you know, the funniest thing, it's not funny, but for us, we can laugh at it today. The insanity of our thinking, because I slept there, I didn't tell my parents, I was living on my own, and they gave me a blanket since I was the only one in the jail cell, and I remember my friend getting to pick me up in my car. You know what I do, the first thing I do? Don't cry, don't call my parents. I roll one. I roll a green one, because I'll darn it, I just went through hell because I was drinking and driving and I got caught and I had to go to jail and now I got to tell my parents. Oh, God, let me roll one up and I need to think about this. Like, that's just the insanity of where I was going. Through that, I'll tell you too, I was dabbling with other stuff and it went really high and low and really dark. The one thing I never did do is I never lied to my parents. I would tell on myself. I told my parents, I'm screwing up, and they would be like, one time my dad came over to the house, and it was just, he was like, we got to do that. And he's a big guy. You know, he was tough. Everyone knew who my dad was. But just that insanity was like a whirlwind now when I look at it. I ended up, 3 weeks after I went to jail, I ended up getting a minor again, not drinking and driving, but I got a fist fight up. I didn't get a fist fight. I slapped a girl. And I thought she deserved it. So it just happened to be her house. And she was like one of those body builders. So that really messed with my ego. So I just did the whole sneak slap because she came at me sideways. It was just such an ego. And but I took the blame because the cops ended up coming. It was a nice neighborhood in Hanford. And he's like, that's your beer. And I was like, I knew whose beer it was. It wasn't mine. He might have been drinking and other things that night. But it was a friend of mine who had the kid at home. So I was like, yeah, that's mine. Stupid. I think of it like, why did I do that? But I caused the big cops to come. So I still had to go to court for that. 3 weeks after that, so my first DUI was October. My misdemeanor, drinking in public or whatever. 3 weeks after that, that was like end of November. Then by January 3rd, 97, I remember that day, surprisingly, because I shouldn't. I was with my boyfriend. I was at his parents' house, and I remember doing housework and then getting together with my friend, and we went road tripping because that was the calm. We just have a couple beers and BS driving like it was no big deal. But that was our thought process at 19, 20. Years old, and we went over to our friend's house, starting to get in the nighttime at 7, and by 8:30, my boyfriend called, and I was like, I'm going to come get you, and he's like, all right, so I'm out in the country, I'm going to go back into Hanford, which was just a few miles, and I go, Rachel, let me use your car, and she was like, all right, you're not supposed to be driving, because I already lost my license, even though I haven't handled the court stuff yet, they yanked it right away when you get a DUI. I was like, I'm just going to go pick him up. And she's like, all right. And I didn't make it. I ended up, and it was really bad weather throughout the whole valley, and I ended up running a stop sign, and this is the part where I don't remember. I was always asking, what happened again? What happened again? Because it took me a long time to process. But I ran a stop sign, went about 50, 55, maybe 60, and a car hit me going about 55, 50, 60. And the car I was in was my friend's. It was completely total. My seat and knee were squished over to the passenger. And luckily they weren't hurt real bad either. They, like, one broke a wrist and one, like, twist or fractured an ankle or something. But they were able to go home that night, thank God. But a couple weird things happened. I found out later. The man who was driving the other car was a Hispanic, real nice man. And he ran into some family friends of ours at the junkyard where they towed the car because it was totaled. And he saw some of my family friends, and he said, are you Amanda's family, parents? And they're like, no, but we're family. And He goes, you tell her I tried to stop. I'm so sorry I tried to stop. Well, at midnight that night, his license was to be revoked, even though it wasn't drinking that night, but he had 4 previous DUIs. So these were all kind of, it was just strange. And then, so anyways, I had that car accident, and in that car accident, they had to, you know, cut me out of my clothes, cut me out of the car. They took me to Hanford. Hanford could not handle me. It was really bad. So they airlifted me from Hanford to Fresno University Medical Center. And this was before it was connected to Fresno Community. And they said I probably wasn't going to make it, and they gave me last rites. And when you're in the hospital and your parents just come in and kind of, and it's that bad, they call it the quiet room. They took my parents to the quiet room. And they said, she's got a 5% chance. She's probably not going to make it on the helicopter. She's lost a lot of blood. We've had to do the quick 6 plank. She's lost so much. And my mom told the doctor she's going to make it, and they're going to save her life. And she got in his face. She told me about this and showed him my picture and said, this is my daughter. Save her. And you don't mess with a mom. But my poor dad, he crumbled. My brother, my sister-in-law, they made it to the hospital. I survived. And they did 12 hours worth of surgery on my brain. And by the end of the week, they had done like 25 hours worth of surgery. My eye was hanging out. I didn't lose sight. I lost sight, but it's not dead. I hurt my optic nerve. Can't heal it. My jaw was broke. I asked my sister-in-law what that looked like, and she said it was weird. I go, did you pass out? Because she's a teacher. She passes out of bloody noses. She goes, no, God was with me. I don't know why I didn't. She goes, because your jaw was off. It was not normal. And she goes, we could see bones, and they wrapped you up. It was bad. And so by the end of the week, at the first week, they had me on ICU, and I'm like, for 17 days. And they had a lot of surgeries, like 25 hours worth. And so once I made it, they let my parents know I'll probably never talk again, which, you know, that's funny, right? And so, I am moving everywhere. And they said I'd probably be a vegetable. I wouldn't walk. And my mom saw, there's so many stories to that are miracles, and I know God is involved. They happened in the hospital with doves and hobos. But long story short is I made it. And I ended up coming home almost nearly 2 months to the day I got to come home to my parents' house. And I was in a wheelchair, and I was very skinny. I had a long ways to go, but I was finally out of the woods for the most part, except now it was time to go to court. And because I still had to deal with my first DUI, and I still had to deal with my minor, we got a lawyer, a very good lawyer, and he said, we're going to start with your rec first because you're going to get the most time for that. You know, your rec happened January 3rd, and on January 1st, they passed that law. Any drinking and driving related to a car accident is a felon. He goes, but even if you're the only one hurt, and there were some fine stipulations that just got passed on the 1st of January. My rec was January 3rd. So he goes, now you're a striker. He goes, you're a convicted striker. And so my mom and dad were like, but what did that mean? And he said, she's most likely going to go to Chowchilla Women's Facility, the nearest prison for women. So he thought that I would get county time. And when you go to Superior Court, you look at everything. It's not just the misdemeanor. You look at this kid's life. You get a lot of letters ran, and the judge will pick 5 letters. And it was a lot of court before the conviction day finally came. And I had to get interviewed by this lady. And my mom had a bad feeling about her, and it was the first time I realized my mom could hurt someone without a conscience. She didn't hurt her, but I saw something happen in my mom's face that scared me more than even what my dad could do. And it's protection. But this lady recommended I go to Chowchilla for 16 months, so we found this out a few days before conviction day, because conviction day is a whole other day. And I wrote my parents a letter, each of them, and I just told them I'm going to do my best. But I think I was coming home. And it was very emotional, and I had about 30 people go to court with me. And I remember I had already started to walk again. I finally got out of that wheelchair after like five months. And I had my knees started to buckle before, like a few days before, because I was stressed. But I remember the 4 days before my conviction day was the first time ever, except for maybe when I was a kid, because I trusted God so fiercely and freely and innocently. It was 4 days before. I remember it was the first time in my whole life I ever let go and let God. I knew in my heart, no matter what, I was going to be okay, even if I went to prison. And that is so significant to me because I wasn't afraid. I was more worried about my parents because they had seen so much. And I know I wouldn't have made it if it wasn't for their love and dedication and fight. And so, by the grace of God, they gave me county time, state time, or county time, not state. And I got to go on house arrest for like 6 months. And in house arrest, you pay like $60 a day. So my parents, let's just say there was a lot of money spent. And they gave me community service. They gave me formal probation for 2.5 and informal for the next 2.5. Formal means if you get in trouble, you don't go to jail. You go straight to the prison. Or you go to the full conviction that they were going to do in the first place. At this time, that's how it was. So, and they said, you have to go through this big class at Kingsview. And then they finally said, and you have to go to Alcoholics Anonymous for your whole probation period. And you're going to have these cards you got to fill out. And I was like, I didn't even know what AA was. First, I thought he said AAA because I didn't understand it. But I was still real foggy too, you guys. I had a long way to go. And so things were going good. Everything got easier. I was still doing inpatient therapy. Then I was going outpatient. I wasn't just doing physical, which is larger motor skills, occupational finer. I had to do mental. I was building new brain tracks. And I finally realized that was my mom and dad, but my memory went, one day I was 16, the next day I was like 10. It was a lot for, my parents told me all this and everyone around, but I was coming out and I was beating all the odds they said, and I was healthy and my memory was almost all the way back, and what I didn't have, the blindness, other things were coming into play. I was using my other senses, and I had the biggest support system, and it was great. And then I started to go back to college, and they told me I could never do it, and I was like, I'm stubborn, dude. Tell me I can, and I'm going to show you what I can do. And so I was glad I still had that, because I was like, let's start at one class at a time. So I started back to college, and I did good. I was getting like a B+ and an English class. I could do a lot of writing. The therapy there was writing about my wreck and my life. And, but then I started to get back into old friends. I started running into old friends at school. And within about, I don't know how I didn't get caught, I ended up picking back up. It was about 2 years after my wreck. I ended up picking up, not on alcohol, nor with the other stuff, just some greens, but for about just, it opened the doors what it just did. And someone found out and told my brother and my family, and I was in trouble. And then I said, okay, well, maybe I have a problem with smoking marijuana. And so I had been going to this meeting at my church, and it was for AA, wasn't anything to do with my church. And I remember there was this young girl there named Sharon. We called her Sharon B, and she sounded like freaking Minnie Mouse. But when she would talk, I always heard her, because she would, she looked like Miss America. She just had the all-American look. But then she would say some of the things she did, and I was like, this chick's a crazy bitch. And so I thought, maybe she can help me. I get the crazies. And so I asked her to be my sponsor. So with that, she said, okay, we're going to do the steps. We're going to meet every week. I want you to call me every day. I want you to call three different women from recovery that have time every day, and not the same three women every day. She just put it out there, and I was like, okay. So I did. But I never got past step four. My grandfather was sick. I was taking care of him. And eventually I ended up picking up again, but this time it was with the booze. And I did exactly what they say. I picked up where I left off. They started having blackouts within a couple months. And within like 6 months to maybe a year, I was like, okay, I'm going to call it. Of course, I went through all the anger thing, and I blamed Alcoholics Anonymous for making me become an alcoholic, because I said, yeah, those mofos set me up. They said they'll do, and I did it probably because they said I would. That's the delusional part that we talk about a lot. And, but it came to a point where I just felt so guilty, and my cousin Tara, who's like my sister, we grew up together, she said, I know you're drinking, and I love you, and I'm not going to throw you away. I know some of your friends couldn't handle it, and not that they didn't throw you away, they just can't handle it. She goes, but I can't help marry you either. She's like, you need to get your shit together. And that night, I just kind of broke down, and the next day I was with my parents, and then I called my sponsor, and I was like, I gotta tell you something. I've been drinking, and she was like, finally. And I was like, what? And she's like, you think I don't know? I know that game. I've been around long enough. And I was like, why did you say anything? She's like, because I'm not your God. She's like, you need to be the one that's willing and ready. You've been in trouble with the law. It didn't stop you. You've been in a wreck and almost died. It didn't stop you. What's it going to take? And I just told her, I said, I don't know if I can do it. I don't know. But I'm willing to try. And luckily, the bittersweet part was my grandpa was very sick, and he got gangrene, and I was taking care of him. So when I wasn't taking care of him, I was doing AA and helping my mom. And it just going to meetings every day and reaching out to the women, like she said, and doing step work and still going back to school. And before you know it, a year goes by, and I'm coming up on my 1 year, and I was tripping because I still had that fear. It was only a year. That's not very long. But then I was like, damn, it's been a year? And I thought, maybe I can do this. And so I started doing recoveries, and then now it's not like I haven't had to have my cards signed in years. But the one thing I always mention, some of my girls know about this, probably all of you guys, when I was coming up on 9 years, well, when I was like 7 years sober, my dad had been getting sick off and on, going to the doctor, text him. They didn't figure it out for like 2 years, and he has good insurance. That they did a biopsy one day, and he had to be in the hospital for 3 days for that, and we found out he had cancer. He had this, he had that, he had a herniated heart. He had a irregulated heart. It would go rapid, and it was off. There was a lot, and so I was taking care of my dad and helping my mom, and he ended up beating the cancer, and then he dropped dead of an embolism because of the type of cancer. And that was a moment of growth for me too, because I went through that phase of understanding that a lot of the things old timers said, that they would say something like, you know, getting sober is the easy part, living life's the hard part. And there's a lot of other little quotes that would go with that, and I thought, oh, shit. And so I realized, and I didn't know if I was going to make it, and it wasn't that I wanted to drink or do drugs or get numb. It was that I didn't wake up. It came to that point one morning when I woke up, and I had that moment of clarity that they talk about. And I ended up calling my counselor, and I started seeing her, and I brought it back. What do they say in recovery? I always bring it back down to the basics. And even though I never stopped my meetings, I started going to meetings every day, usually twice a day. I started my steps over again, and I made it through. But I stuck with the recovery. And that first year after my dad, I sat on my hands. And it was hard, and it was uncomfortable, and it was erratic. And there was a few times I almost got in a fist fight, and I think it was my fault. For once, and well, I probably always was, but I just got desperate. I listened to the newcomers, I listened to the old timers, I listened to the in betweeners, I listened to the in and outers, and I just sat there like this. I didn't want to talk much, I cried a lot, and within time, I started to feel more accepting, and I started to get better, and now I'm a mom. Now I have a baby. I went through a divorce. I'm with another alcoholic that luckily is sober. We do things a little different in the program, so that can sometimes be a little difficult. But the day I stop learning will probably be the day God takes me home. Me and Monica talked about that earlier, and I'm not ready. I love God, but I don't want to go home. I got a baby that needs me, and I got more life to live, and I'm more grateful that I get to do it. And I, even my girlfriends that have hard times, and when I have them, to be able to be there for each other and to have that confidence or that confidant, and know no matter what, just for this moment, we're going to get by. The fact that we even have people, I mean, I met people in the beginning that didn't even have family that cared whether they were dead or alive on the side of the road. And I did. And I still do. It may not be the same people because they had to go be with God, but I still have a lot of gratitude. My cup is still half full. And I'm just very, very grateful for all of you. I feel more humbled than ever, even more as I'm older. I don't feel like I know it all. The older I get, the more I realize I need to learn. And with that, I'm grateful to be here. And I'm going to just keep coming back and say thanks.
Wow. Thanks, man.
So this is where things get a little interesting, because we do have a few people online, and then we have most of you are here in person. So what we do now is we go to the discussion portion of our meeting, and we'll ask Mandy to go ahead and pick on some people to share. Again, just keep in mind we'd like to give everybody the chance to participate if they can. And bear with me as we try to work out this sort of technology thing so that the people online can hear and see you guys and vice versa. So I think I'm going to turn the camera around.
Okay.
And you can pick on somebody here.
And let me tell you one more thing really quick, and I don't usually do this crosstalk, but the miracle, 6 years after I was sober, the cousin that helped me ended up needing rehab, and she was in rehab with this dear friend of mine, Bill. And the only one that made it out of that rehab in the long run, she's sober now, but it took her going back out a few more times, and we lost a few that have been very dear to my heart. But Bill's the one that's been able to stay, and he's been here ever since. That's how I got to know him. Anyways, he can talk about anything, work in the program, live a life on life's terms, whatever you guys want. And I'm not going to be in control because that's just too much for my ego. So I'm going to tag one of y'all and then try to tag boy, girl, and have fun. Okay, Shauna. I see your head shaking at me.
My name is Shauna, an alcoholic.
Hey, Shauna.
I'm very grateful to the Alcohol Anonymous program. It definitely has saved my life. Thank you, Mandy, for sharing. Now, how can we not believe in I liked everything you said. You know, I like how you talked about, you know, the things over, but the living on life's terms. That's been the hardest sometimes for me. And to say you only got to change one thing, everything. Mm-hmm. You know, I had just celebrated 15 years in May.
Yeah.
15 years shift was my big one because that 14 years for me. Yeah, I celebrated my 14 year shift. You know, I was like, life is good. I got a wonderful husband. Things are going great. I'm worried about money. And I know God's like, ooh, Shauna, we some tomorrow. My husband left me for dinner. And everything went good. And so it's been, you know, I was in a dark spot. I was in for a couple of days. And I knew that I had to get on my knees. And I had to start praying because things were going to be bad if I didn't. And I pulled, now I just pulled myself out of it. Kind of got myself distracted with other things. And I don't think I really got to deal with those issues because I was distracted in another relationship that I got started right away. That's what I do. And that one bit me in the ass. So I found myself last week, led by my emotions, which I know better than that, and winning. Ordered a big old margarita, because I'll show you, because that's how my thinking keeps, you know. Had that, since we had a margarita, $10, what the hell?
Damn.
I'm getting older. So I sat there staring at it, and went to get my lip gloss out of my purse, and my 15-year chip, literally, went flying out of my purse, and landed right in front of that tree. And I was like, I felt like, God, you know, I'm in the middle of a pity party right here, you know? I don't see this right now. But it's just enough time to say, hey, no, consider this, you know? And luckily, thank God, by the grace of God, this is right. So, a lot of pain. So now, after 15 years, I'm going to probably have to get down the positive condition if I'm going to get through this crap. And without any distraction, and just do the deal if I want to stay sober. Because that's the closest I've been. And I'm so grateful I didn't pick up my beautiful grandchildren. I would have been a mess. I can't even imagine what had happened to me. I think that's all this for me. But anyway, I'm here. I've been almost going like 2 meetings a day. Kind of like Manny was saying, back to the basics, you know? Doing the deal. And so, I'm just going to keep coming back. I know. And I have today. I have today. And I know as long as I don't pick up that first function, no matter what comes my way, I know I'm going to get through it. It's going to suck. And I think the bottom line is, like she said, I feel uncomfortable and I don't like it. So I guess I'll get uncomfortable till it gets comfortable. She's great for me, here in New York, all the moms, that's for sure. And that's why.
Thanks, Sean. You
want a pack of boy?
Oh, sure. Let's see. That's good.
Oh, that's good.
Hey, Zach.
Creature, shit, reminded me a lot of my drinking. I remember when I first drank, I actually forgot about this, but I was like 5 to 7 years old, and me and my brother was snapping my stepdad at the time, and we were drinking here like a collection of beers, and just snuck in there, and we were drinking, and spitting it out, and just laughing. And your story reminded me of that. Also, DUIs, I've had a lot of DUIs in jail a lot of times, and it's been a bit of a mess. Right now, kind of where I'm at with my recovery is I've been sober for about a little over 2 years, 3 months, and it's a weird point in my life. Bill was actually one of my first serious sponsors. He did leave me at one point, which I'm grateful for. He kind of led me to, be more accountable for my recovery and kind of, I guess, for myself, more accountable for not doing what I was. I'm just happy to be in the room because I feel like I've kind of been replacing like the alcohol, mm-hmm. relationships, dating a lot. Just kind of in this weird place where I want to hurt people anymore. It's kind of funny that we're here. Just because my relationship with my son is here, and I'm choosing to like live in another country. It's a tough deal. Try that long distance relationship. I saw if I stay close to you guys help me a lot. So just gonna try to kind of come to a lot of meetings, at least on Monday as well. So we go to Mary Brothers.
So let it hear. Thanks, Seth.
Glad you're here. I'm calling the first. I think I'm just going to go to
I always loved hearing you. I haven't seen you in a while, but I know we're talking before the meeting. It was about the lifelong astrology. And, I think you get sober, and that doesn't mean that things are getting better, or that we're not always doing the way we think we should. I know that I'm really part of myself, and I don't do it right. I know what the right way is, but I don't always make those choices. But I'm always sitting in touch for a while, and I know it's a whole topic about choosing comfort versus character growth or something like that. I don't know. It's close, but I feel like it's like that, taking that contrary action is so, it's almost comfortable than like it. And for me, I feel like I did get sober in my 20s, so I was younger, so I'm still, I feel like I'm growing up in AA. So I feel like I'm still getting the same lessons that a normal would get, right? And it's knowing how to opinion or how to naturally use the tools or maybe come on, And it's just harder for me because I feel like responsibility, accountability, being a real adult plus things that I just avoided this never has to do because I was strong. And I would just always hunt it off on somebody else to need it and say I get to do those entire things.
Would you like to, she left.
Oh.
It was her first meeting tonight. Bummer. So, David.
David, alcohol.
Darn it.
Thank you, Nancy, for your share. I've heard this story a few times, and what struck me as I was listening tonight is really, it's God's grace of second chances. And I am so thankful that I got a second chance because left to my own designs, I was on that path to suicide and slow motion. And yesterday there was a social function that so Mandy and I were at the same place. Her daughter was running around. Apparently her daughter's not seen a beard before. But knowing the daughter is a blessing to me. Right? And it's just second chances. Right? The things like one of the things I get to do this today, right? I get to go to a job, and I actually really like my job. You know, they're very close. There was a period of time there when I was very close to losing that job. You know, at one point they escorted me off the property, and that began the whole process. So. But I'm still there today, and I want to be able to turn that around ahead of the rings got calls. I tried to quit on my own over and over and over again, and that power was beyond me. So getting into the rooms at AA said, you got to turn it over to God. And I am so thankful that in turning that over to God, that things are going great today. I do practice that gratitude in the morning. And I was unable to do that on my own, and AA showed me a way, so I'm thankful for that. So that I can do that on my own.
Thanks, David.
Thanks, David.
Here's the girl.
I'm Tracy Taylor. Sorry.
Thanks, Tracy.
Thank you. Thank you, Jamie. I was even a little bit more. I was hanging around. I was just going to go to the floor. Wow, I very much lived with it. Because I just told that my head told me self-doubt and that I'm not worth it. I'm not worth it. And I'm growing up. I'm growing up just playing my life in AA. You know, I got to look for some of us to enjoy. And I, you know, looking back on that, it's like my other life, I did not learn in 15 years what I learned in a little over two here this time around. And it's just amazing to me the difference of my story. So, Jay, I don't know. Think about that, it's like this one. I'm talking about it and it never broke out. But it's just, I'm so excited to be sober, for what? And I don't remember, my first time around, I don't remember the first step there. Yeah, I don't remember the first step there for my first time around. I don't remember learning it, I don't remember reading it, I don't remember hearing it. I'm sure I did. I'm sure I must have, because it hasn't changed. You know, it just popped up this time around for me. But it's just so different. And it's so different. And the gratitude is safe. Is everything. And that's grace. Definitely grace. Yeah, it sounds so grateful to be here. I'm so grateful to be sober. I'm so grateful to be driving around. I'm just having such a good time getting my sobriety. And, So I'm grateful for your family.
So I did that when I was 21, I went to UI when I was 24, And then I had a configuration, clients, all that stuff. So once I got that, I was not very enjoying it anymore. But yeah, so like right now, I can still work for 1 month.
Basically,
kind of excommunicated from the family. Not from why. I mean, I still love her family. But, and again, that wasn't important to me that, you know, it's my family's. But they said I needed to go to AA. Some of her family members are in AA, so I know some of them. And they needed the program work for them. So I got in my first meeting was this meeting at the Red Cross building, and I heard that part about all the things we try to drink correctly, like switch from scotch to brandy, not drinking at home, drinking only at home, and I was like, oh my gosh, these are all the things that I've been trying to do so I could drink and the right way. And at any rate, I just, that night, it was really weird, that first night, it just felt like the right place to be in these rooms, drinking is, I don't know how to describe it once, it starts off happy and joyful, then it gets a little gray, and sometimes we're good, sometimes we're bad, and in the end, it's just miserable trying to find the right drink and making sure I don't upset my family. And when it's prayer time, not just think like booze. And trying to hide beers and switch beers and where am I going to put my booze? And it got to that dark moment in my life that it just didn't work anymore. So when I came into AA, it was the right place for me. And been here a little more than six years plus. And it's good. Every day, today is better than those days of drinking and turning around and driving to St. Mark when I'm home. Sorry, St. Mark. St. Mark is a cosmic shrink. It was just my story of choice. But, thank you.
Thanks, Jerry.
Take us out.
Yeah, I'm an alcoholic municipal husband. That's all like the. Huh? Is there someone else here?
Oh, Paige.
Oh, Paige. Okay. Let's light the torches and head down to Save Mart and burn those signs down, man.
I'm free.
Right.
Yeah, I want to cherish this moment. You know, I mean, for my work, I depend not as much as Jim has had to. It's not oppressive, but Zoom has been a great tool for me for business, and so it's been easy for me to jump into that mode of fellowship, and I've been here long enough that I've learned how to be vulnerable even online. If I hadn't learned how to do that, I would probably have a much different opinion of the situation. But I'm just getting back. It's been a few months now into the in-person stuff, and this meeting is just here just tonight because we couldn't find a facility that would open to us. And so we're very blessed, I feel, to have this building. And I want to remember that state of mind because, right now, I feel really positive about seeing your faces. Many of you I've known for many years, and it really fills me with joy to see you and to be with you. And it'll be probably just a few weeks before I start finding your faults again, and I start thinking about what kind of bullshit is this? There's no carpet. What's this looking about? I'm not well, I'm just not well. And I appreciate you being patient with me while I'm learning to get better. What's really going on for me, really big thing going on for me right now is about employment. And I was thinking about this from a slightly different angle. When I was first getting sober, I had a job that I really was not doing well.
I mean, I was a wreck. I was a wreck, man. And but I was working out of my home, and my boss was in Houston or D.C. They had no clue about just how spun I was, you know. And so I was in a state of self-loathing, if you can relate to that. Just feeling like I don't deserve any of the income I'm getting, but screw them, I'm taking it anyway, you know. And so I got sober. And I was sober about 8 months, and I got caught up in a corporate resizing. They were getting ready to sell the business, and they were just getting rid of people, and it was nothing personal. It just happened, and I remember how much peace I was when my boss called and told me I was without a job. I was like I was more concerned about her well-being because she seemed to be really upset about me losing my job, and I was kind of like, yeah, what the hell? God's gonna take care of me, you know. And the crazy thing is, I mean, I was like 8 months sober, and I really, really felt like I don't have anything to worry about. And I don't know where that came from. I've since resorted back to self-reliance and conviction that, you know, I need to make things happen. But that was an interesting thing. I was unemployed for, I don't know, 6-8 months, something like that. I got a job working with a company that I had done some work with before, and that turned out to be such an amazing blessing of a job. I was there a little over 11 years. I was able to distinguish myself amongst my peers. The company paid me not rock star money, but they paid me a lot more than I needed, right, to pay the bills. And so I got really comfortable kind of living like that, and then that business got sold, and things changed. And so I, being the clever, self-reliant person that I am, I went and found another sucker that would hire me, and they paid me like, you know, 1.5 times what I was making before, which is like fucking crazy money, right? And after a year, they fired me. Yeah, I didn't get resized. I didn't get laid off. I got fired. No, it's true. It's true. I can own that today. I mean, okay, at first, I wasn't all about owning that, right? I was like, what they did and what they had, well, shouldn't matter is, I was not a good candidate for the job that I was put in, and I didn't do well, I didn't succeed, and I got fired. That's the truth. I just recently went through, well, a year ago, I went through 9.5 months of unemployment, and I don't know what 9.5 months of unemployment does for you, but I'll tell you what it does for me is it destroys my ego, and it makes me think that I don't deserve to have a job. And so a guy came along and offered me a job. He actually offered me a very good job. It was a very good paying job. It wasn't nearly worth what I thought I should be paid, because I'm delusional. But I took this job, and this job the last year has more than paid the bills. It's done great things for me. And 2 weeks ago, about 2 weeks ago, one of my former colleagues, going back to the company that I did so well at, she called me and she said, hey, I've got this position with our company that's we're growing, and would you be interested? And I tried not to appear as desperate as I really felt, I mean, the job that I have today is a good job, but it falls short on a number of things that are kind of important to me. So, anyway, she set up an interview. I interviewed with the CEO of the company, we're getting towards the end of the call, and I'm thinking, I gotta close this guy, right? I gotta get this interview. I mean, I really thought like the best thing that can happen is I can get another interview. And so I give him this, well, what would be the appropriate next steps for us then? And he says, well, I'll have an offer letter for you tomorrow. And I almost fell out of my fucking chair. The guy's gonna offer me a job after one interview. And I think it was a video call, right? I think he saw, because I'm transparent, I think he saw that I was shocked at this revelation. And he said to me something that I hope I never forget. He said, I had made up my mind to hire you before the call, based on the recommendation of your former colleague. I got people getting me jobs today. That is fucking crazy. And I want to remember this, because in about 3 weeks,
I'm going to start thinking they're not paying me enough. Right? I mean, come on, you know, if you're with me, right? You're on that crazy train. But, you know, Mandy and I have seen a lot of each other over, for me, it's, well, it's over 17 years. For me, today is 1 day, 5 months, and 16 years since my last drink. And Mandy had to watch me go through a year and a half of drinking and going to meetings. And that wasn't pleasant for anybody. And I really feel fortunate to be with you tonight. Thank you all for coming out and supporting what we're trying to do here. I hope we'll see you again. And that's enough out of me. So,
thank you.
Yeah.
Sure.
So, I'm sorry? There was, but just Mike who's recording right now. So, yeah, so we're effectively offline at this point. Okay, so hey, the Valley Group encourages sponsorship and service to our fellowship.